Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Laura Steinbrick. Laura is an educator for 25 years, a national presenter of EdTech and instructional practices. She is also an educational consultant, Zigazoo app content creator, and the author of Rock the Boat, a FeedSpot top 20 to up 200 blog in education. She has published articles for Matt Miller, Kahoot, Getting Smart, and the ISTE Teacher Network newsletter, Buncee, and various other edu-related companies. She's also a contributing author in several educational books. Welcome to the podcast, Laura.
Thank you. I am so thankful and grateful for you having me today. Thank you so much.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
There have been many times, and this being my 26th year, so I've completed 25. And in those 25 years, there's so many. I had to think about which one to highlight. So I decided to go with one that will fit more teachers right now is when you are in the trenches as far as you're overloaded with responsibility from your building or district. And several years ago, three districts ago, I was I was teaching seven classes in six class periods, like seven different subjects. And I had two going on at the same time. I don't know why the administrators or myself thought that would even remotely work. But I was trying to teach middle schoolers, seventh and eighth grade, desktop publishing, where we created all of the programs for all of the events held at our school. And I loved teaching that class. And then they had me do five or six students at, on HTML, web coding, and programming at the same time. And that year I decided, by the end of the year, I told my principal, I will merge the following year. I will never do that again. That completely broke me. It's way too much. As Dave Burgess told me years later, the more you're good at something, the more they have you do. Like the more you show that you're capable, the more they have you do. So learning how to say no is huge for for educators.
Yeah, and having been a world language teacher, I had an offer once to teach six sections and probably just as many classes, and I did not take that. But I have had friends that teach multiple languages and have kind of gone down that road as well. So kind of being that electives teacher with tech and world language, and I totally get what Dave Burgess said, right? If you're capable of teaching it, they're going to find sections for you to teach.
And I want to say that I was teaching eighth grade ELA. I was doing yearbook with eighth grade. I had Spanish with seventh and eighth grade. I had careers with seventh graders. And then I had the desktop publishing with seventh and eighth grade, and the web design with seventh and eighth grade. And those were the ones I remember that year, that all of them were separate reps. Every single one. I was stressed, to say the least.
So the most important thing I think teachers today need to remember is just please, you know when to say no. You know, your mental health comes first. The time that you need, it's so much easier to just prep for two different classes than it is to prep for six or seven and in there, you know.
And I know a lot of teachers are facing a lot of things like that. Even if you think you're not doing that much work, remember that we're pandemic teaching and it really is that much work. So learn to say no. I ended up actually going to a different district and got a renewal on my, because I was pretty burnt out at that point, thinking I really should just go work somewhere where I don't have to take it home with me. Oh, it was so much work, but I went to a new district and got a new life. So I just knew revitalized my career.
Good, good. So I mentioned in the bio that you have published for ISTE, Kahoot, Getting Smart, Class Time, and Parent Square, amongst others. What got you started in writing, and did somebody notice your work, or was it something that you kind of just put out there and took that risk?
Both. So here is a funny secret. When I first got on Twitter, well, when Twitter first came out, I got an account.
Okay.
But I didn't know what to do with it, and I didn't do anything with it. I just got an account. So it looks like I've been on Twitter a while. But then I'm going back to personal development and went to a conference in 2016. It was actually a Southwest Missouri oriented ed tech conference, and the keynote was John Spencer. And I thought, you know, I started to see what they were doing with Twitter. And he mentioned following him on Twitter. And then I saw that there might actually be things on Twitter other than your, what you had for dinner, how many miles you ran, you know, and just the things that you see on Facebook. So I thought, wow, I should actually be on Twitter. But for some reason, I thought I had to have like an established presence to be on Twitter. So I thought I had to have a blog, because everybody I was scoping out, like John Spencer, had a blog. So I created my blog, to seem like I should belong on Twitter in the edusphere. And then the other reason I was thinking is, you know, I spend a lot of time helping teachers and I go over the same thing over and over again. So what if I wrote it down and then I could just say, hey, here's the link, go look. And that I thought would save me time. I was wrong on a couple points there, but I discovered that writing is in my blood. I thought it might be, but it is, because it's one of those happy places. Like some people see it as a chore. I see it as a filling my bucket moment. I just get happy when I write, even if it's a paper.
And so you've worked with Matt Miller a little bit on Twitter chats, and also Rochelle Danae Poth, who I've had on the podcast. You all have done a 4 o'clock faculty book study together as well.
Oh yeah. And actually, to finish answering your first question, I got started with ISTE. They noticed some things that I responded on in a chat. And then also Rochelle, my good friend, Rochelle Danae Poth, she was a big, big time influence there. She was in the Teacher Education Network. And I want to say that I'd like to say she was also a huge influence, because she would tell people, hey, ask Laura Steinbrink about this. And she just brought me into her big realm, her sphere of influence there in ISTE. And ISTE started having me write a few things too. They did a feature on me in a magazine, which I think kind of got the ball rolling, and they got that from a chat. And then Matt Miller and I hooked up in his chat. And we've done some projects together, which is fun. Got another one in the works, hopefully, that I pitched to him that he's like excited about as well. So we hopefully will co-create again soon. We like to think that we share the same edgy brain. We think along the same kind of paths. And he was a language teacher too. So maybe that's our world language companionship coming in there.
And a lot of this writing has also led to presentations. So on your website, you have presentations, ed tech, also student engagement using Wakelet, train like a Navy SEAL in terms of using SEL with students. Tell me a little bit about maybe some of the ideas that you had for these presentations and some of the work. You told me you are ambassador for Wakelet and Buncee, also Microsoft Innovative Educator. So how is this kind of all that experience kind of contributed to these presentations?
Well, the more I learn about tools and their flexibility, the more I want to share it with other people. So I started with Wakelet at conferences presenting because, so with Wakelet, it has so many things you can do with it, like Google Slides. It's the potential goes beyond what the creators initially thought. And now they've made it collaborative. So I love sharing it with educators, because you can content create, like I can create content, I can have students create content. All of the integrations make it super easy to use Flipgrid as audio or video or a mixture. You can use any kind of writing and write directly on that. I've used it for scavenger hunts, for tests, and you can have assignments based on content creator curation, where students have to be picky about what they're adding to their Wakelet, like a museum curator. You don't just put anything in there. So whatever the topic might be that you have on research, they need to think of it in terms of this has to be the best of the best, which is a good exercise in and of itself. So I look at tools like Google Slides and Wakelet and even Buncee and think, okay, this is what they're meant to do. But what else can they do that might serve my creative purposes?
Okay.
And I kind of go from there. And the more I talk about it online on Twitter, the more people are like, hey, can you write about that? Well, sure I can. I did a white paper for Buncee. So if anyone wants to know how SEL and creativity can mesh and get some research behind that, that is on their blog, and we can have links to that too, because it's it was a great piece. I found some great research from a professor out of the University of Missouri, and she had written a book that had a lot of research in it for social emotional learning and things to do in the classroom that I just thoroughly enjoyed.
And you said a lot of getting on Twitter and feeling like you had a presence was putting out your personal blog. And so how long have you had that blog, and how is your writing of your personal blog maybe separate than what you do for these other organizations?
The personal blog I started in 2016. That was like the big year. I made a big shift in my thinking about a lot of things. Yeah. And I started writing in 2016. Seems like it was farther ago than that, but it really wasn't. And it has taken off because I found that while I like to do some of it as reflection on my own practices or thinking, if I stick to what helps other people when I come up with things to do in the classroom or to use tools or to review a tool, if I stick to that and provide educators with ways that they can use it too, and sometimes templates, then that seems to be the most popular post. I don't always like to create a template because that's kind of, sometimes I will, but there's a lot of people already out there that do templates and that they're great at it, like Matt Miller and then Lisa Johnson with EdTech Chef for You and Casey Bell. There's a whole bunch of templates out there. But I like to come up with ideas that do not require a lot of prep and not necessarily tech and not necessarily a template. So, but even Alice Keeler has 1,000 templates out there. I mean, a lot of people have templates and I love them and I love using them. So if I can come up with ways to use their templates, then I can give them a shout out and I don't have to create the wheel. I just want to use it on my car to get us where we're going. So
I like how you said that. Yeah. Also, yeah. How can you use this template kind of guiding people? And the use of things helps as well. Good, good. Something that you highlight on your Twitter profile that we don't see for every educator is something that you do that's kind of outside of education. And you've been singing in a Christian rock band for a while. So let me know how you got started and kind of the gigs that you have coming up.
Well, COVID kind of put a damper on our gigs. So while we've had a few churches and other venues start back up with having people, we have not accepted any requests yet. The timing is difficult when we are all working professionals with children. But before COVID, pre-COVID, I had some guy or two at church that I like to sing specials with. And one of them had his own sound equipment and had been in plenty of, you know, like country bar bands and stuff like that. You know, he just sings a lot and then would just sing specials at church. So one time we kind of played around and sang some stuff at a church event with his equipment. And then we decided maybe we should take the show on the road. And then we added some people. My husband became the lead guitar. And so we had three singers and then we brought in another guitar and the members have kind of floated in and out. The one who kind of helped to get us started with the equipment was a had been in the military, and then he went back to Texas. So we were left thinking, and we had a meeting, do we continue? Do we buy our own equipment? Mm-hmm. Is this the end of our singing and playing together? But we actually truly loved it, and we had begun writing our own songs. So we decided to invest, and we bought equipment, and we did a lot of gigs. We played at Silver Cities, which is a big place in Branson. It's a kind of like Six Flags, only more Ozark Mountains, crusty, yummy food style Six Flags. And it's just in a beautiful area. And we get to do Young Christians Weekend there. We did that for several years in a row, which is super fun playing for that many people. Like in the gazebo when they first walk in. So there might be a couple hundred people that hear you just in and out, in and out. So that was always fun playing it bigger. We played at fairs and things like that. But I hope we get that going. But I'm right now finishing a master's in teaching and learning, so I don't have time. And then our drummer is in the middle of masters and had a baby, so he doesn't have time. So it's his first baby too. So you know how the first baby is.
Yeah.
That you spend a lot more time. And after that, you feel like you kind of know what you're doing on the second kid. Not as stressed. But yeah, we hope to get that going again. But right now it's kind of on the back burner. I just lead singing at church and sing there.
Well, at least you're still using your voice and you all have the equipment. Yes. So it's not like, you know, you have to procure equipment again. It's just kind of finding the right time to get started up again. And
yes,
you know, I know that's a great sense of like, I think that's a great outlet for people. I mean, I have sung in choir, and you know, they started back this fall after a year and a half, and just having the you know, being there in front of groups and you know, having that opportunity to use your talent, I think.
It's incredible.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, it's incredible. Unless you've actually done it and sung for an audience that was engaged, it's hard to explain the feeling that you get, but it's so energizing. It's a lot of work. Our favorite venue, however, is actually a prison that we have done several times, and they are the most enthusiastic crowd. It's unnerving your first time to go in a prison and sing, because the prison that we sing at, they are just running loose. Like, they are in there with us, just in and out. They hear, because it's in a small trailer, and we shake the trailer, and then more people come in, but they have to earn the privilege to be in there. They have to sign in with the chaplain on duty, and guards sometimes come in, but it was just a little unnerving the first time. That is one of the most rewarding experiences I've ever done, is when we sing at the prison.
And hopefully you guys will be able to do that again later hopefully. On. Yeah. Because I think when you're reaching out to, you know, populations like that, that don't often have, you know, bands come in or speakers come in, you feel really, you know, because you're doing something special, right? You're giving up your time and just letting them hear your music and let it speak to them. So, you know, that's great. Talk to me about some of your thoughts on teacher self-care and mental health. You know, this year, like last year, a lot of people are quitting. I think more so in the 21-22 school year, and a lot of teachers are thinking about, you know, changing professions. You know, we talked about in your trench story that you learned to say no. So what are your thoughts on, you know, teachers taking things off their plate? Maybe, you know, having that, you know, this is a stopping point. I can't do any more beyond a certain point.
Yes. And it's very difficult. And I know a lot of teachers feel frustrated. I mean, all over the nation, because as you know, I talk to teachers all over the nation all the time. I'm in several Voxer groups. That 4 o'clock faculty PLN is probably the biggest one that I am active in. And we talk all the time. So I know what teachers are thinking on the East Coast and the West Coast, and then in the Heartland where I am. And in the South, we talk all the time. So everybody's district is experiencing teacher burnout and teachers quitting. Mm-hmm. I know of districts that have had teachers quit in October and November. And I have, I know some teachers who are reflecting, do I even finish out the year? Mm-hmm. Can I call it good at the half? There are things I can do besides teach. Mm-hmm. And that really saddens me. And I'm not entirely sure once you get to that point, some of that's going to have to come from inside. You're going to have to do some of that yourself. And I'm not going to advise every teacher stay in it because not everybody should. You need to do what's best for you. We also have a hard time getting subs. And I think that is part of why the load for teachers seems a lot more besides everything going on with COVID, mm-hmm. that now we're also covering everybody else's classes. My current district does give you a little bit of a pay if you give up your prep and go help cover. So that's nice, but we would cover anyway, because, you know, we're teachers. If they say we need somebody this hour and you're on prep, you're like, okay, I'll go cover that class. Yeah. I mean, you would want them to cover for you, so you cover for them. That only makes sense to me. So I want everyone to consider, first, make sure in your heart that why you are in education, know your why, and know that you can outlast any, generally speaking, you can outlast a bad administrator, because even good ones, they are not around that long. Mm-hmm. I was at my previous school district for 9 years, and I had 7 different administrators. Mm-hmm. So I was never overly concerned if there was a bad administrator. I would just try to help them. But the best advice I can give you, anyone who's struggling, is kind of my guideline is from Shelley Burgess and Beth Huff's book, Lead Like a Pirate. Mm-hmm. It really struck me when they talked about making your list and prioritizing what you need to do based on what affects your students. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So above that, I would also add what affects your family. Mm-hmm. So think about your home life first and prioritize that. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing would be, okay, this directly affects my students. And then the last thing would be all the bureaucratic things that you're supposed to do, all the paperwork, all the, all that does not affect my immediate lesson, but I will attend to it, but it's not first and it's not second. You know, the things that my students can live without and my family can live without, they're going to kind of get shuffled to the back, because sometimes it can seem like too much. And just know that you can take things off your plate. It does not have to be the administrator. Mm-hmm. If you're going to rely on administrators to have to do that, you may not understand how full their plate is. And so they're trying to balance everything and help us, but we are also going to have to take charge of some of that and say, I can't do that. I can't go do this thing because I need to actually stop and do this thing. Sometimes it's a balance, but keep in mind that we are going to accomplish what we want to do. Like whatever time you have, you will do what you want to do in that time. So you're going to have to make a list to make a, and then there's brain science behind list making. Check it off when you get it done. If you're stressed because your list is so long, believe me, I know how that feels. Then if you make a plan, so, okay, I didn't, like, for example, this week, I meant to have my videos finished and uploaded for Zigazoo by Wednesday. Yeah. But Wednesday was my day off. Tuesday, I had to work all day and then go to my son's ball game. And it was the first time he was going to get to play. So obviously that's me doing something on the side or for school even. So I thought, okay, Wednesday, I have the day off, but I had to go shopping. You know, I had to make a salad, overnight salad. I had to do some prep for food on Thursday. And then I was just tired. And thinking, okay, can I push off videos or do I take a nap? Nap won, because sometimes the nap has to win. And so take a nap. I had a headache. I was tired. I did not feel well. So I took a nap. And we feel guilty when we do that. Educators feel guilty every time we give ourselves self-care. But you have to prioritize. And then I made a plan to do the videos today. And I did. So even having the plan, brain science says that shifts the dopamine to your brain and you're going to feel good. Even if you don't realize that plan later, if you've made a plan because you didn't see, but I've made a plan to do it later, that helps you feel better as well.
Yeah, I think that's so great to, you know, have that, because you basically everybody's given the same amount of time. It's how you use it, right? And I put, you know, reminders in my phones for different things. And especially if it's a weekly ongoing thing. And, you know, if I don't get to it on Tuesday, you know, I'll make sure I get to it on Thursday, whatnot. You know, I think also having that, those habits, right? The, yes. I learned Miracle Morning, for example, from Danny Bauer, and just those startup and shutdown routines, right? When you're yeah. starting up and ending work, and also finding, you know, pockets of time, like for example, somebody like me and doing the podcast, those pockets of time, I'm not going to be overwhelmed, but you know, something I like doing. So where are the pockets of time to do that? So I think, you know, for busy people like us, and we write, we, you know, we do a lot of media, just, you know, find those spaces, because if it fills your bucket, then you will prioritize it, right? But
exactly, but, right. And you yeah. will. And even Alice Keeler said about students and deadlines, they're going to take as much time as you give them. Mm-hmm. Don't feel bad about setting a deadline. Yeah. That deadline helps you then have time to grade papers. So I tell my kids, here's the deadline. And then I tell myself, I will grade anything turned in immediately that yeah. I can. I will build in time. Mm-hmm. After the deadline, I make sure my students know that it will get graded, but on my time, not yeah. when they demand it. Because, mm-hmm. you know, if you're going to turn it in late, I'm still going to accept it. I'm not going to dock points for your behavior. I'm going to look at your learning,
yeah.
but I can't be rushed on the grading because now you're on my time. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I, you know, the deadline, if it's the deadline, that's my time. So I'll have to pick when I can do that. And they're good with that because I try to grade at least weekly and then try to catch up stuff. Mm-hmm. But have your students set goals too. If you guys have students who are struggling with anxiety, like maybe some of us teachers, mm-hmm. it's hard. So one thing that does help is have them do a goal too. If they get overwhelmed because they have so much to do, have them write it down mm-hmm. and then prioritize whose classes have the work that must be done first. They need to know their teachers, who's going to accept late work, who mm-hmm. is not. Because, you know, in a lot of places, even where I work now, that's kind of a teacher, opinion. You should, mm-hmm. whether or not you dock points, take work, you know, they may have a policy of you have to accept it a week later or whatever. But after mm-hmm. that, you know, the students need to, and they know whose work has to be done first. Have them make a list. It's a lot less overwhelming if they can make a list and then start checking things off. And then the dopamine gets released every time you make a check mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. or cross yeah. it off.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And you know, students, sometimes we assume, like if we're teaching high schoolers, that they know how to manage their time as a senior or junior, but that's not always the case, right?
Yeah, we adults don't always know how to manage their time, so why assume that? And then I model it, because I'll be like, oh yeah, because I have to cut off my list today. So students know I have to do that too. I have a lot of things going on. So always share that with your kids, and drink water, educators, drink mm-hmm. water.
Yeah, because you could run to the bathroom in that 5 minute break, even if yes. you're trucking down the hall, you know, you learn to do that. But yeah, that's something I always remembered when I was teaching. I just, you know, you gotta stay hydrated, because not staying hydrated will give you headaches and other issues.
Yes, and coffee is not hydration. It's needed, I get it, but it's not gonna hydrate you. Yeah. So please balance with water. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. In the pre-chat, you told me you have a couple of conferences coming up, such as the TCEA conference in Texas. Do you have any other speaking engagements coming up in the winter?
I did not book any this year. The last one I had was in October mm-hmm. because I started a brand new district and I wasn't sure what their policies would be and how many days out. And okay. of course, when you start a new district, you start ground zero on your leave days. Mm-hmm. So I had several built up from the 9 years in my previous district, but I do not, unfortunately, get to take them to the next district. Mm-hmm. They're not rollover days, sadly. That should be a thing. We should tell our states to make that a thing. When you go district to district, you should get to roll your days in. But so I'm just doing TCEA and I kind of lied. Well, no, it's this summer. I did put in for virtual ISTE because I can't go to New Orleans with a son who's on a travel baseball team and they go out of state a lot. So that's kind of where my focus is in the summer on my family. But ISTE is offering a live version. So the two upcoming would be TCEA, and I am going in person, and I'm super excited to do that. I will have a presentation in person on sketch notes and graphic organizers, which is a lot of brain-based learning researched strategies with their head of TCEA, I highly recommend catching out my session. And I also will have an online option they've asked me to do, and that's my Train Like a Navy SEAL. So I will do a recording of it. I've presented that live and virtually for TCEA in the past.
Okay. Yeah, I'll make sure I put that in the show notes because this will be released a little bit before that for people who are interested in going to that. Well, out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
It is okay to say no. And you are going to be in charge of taking things off your plate. So just know that you can say no to something like to keep some balance.
Yeah, it's so important to remember.
Yeah.
Where can people connect with you and find you online?
If you want to, the best place is Twitter at Steinbrink Laura with the S and the L capitalized. That is where I spend a lot of my time, especially educationally. Mm-hmm. I'm also on Instagram at Steinbrink Laura, and that's going to be a mix of fun, family, friends, and education. Mm-hmm. And then the same, whatever I post on Instagram also is on Facebook. So you can catch me on Facebook if you don't mind. Also watching some videos of my son playing ball or other fun things mixed in with education. And that is Laura Ingalls Steinbrink.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for having me. This has been a blast. I hope you all have a great rest of your day.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.